This is Susan Strait, editor of Dimensions Magazine, and I'm here at the Aztec Conference with Ed Young, our keynote speaker from this morning. Ed Young is the science writer from The Atlantic Magazine. Ed, it's really delightful to meet you and to have heard your keynote this morning.
Yeah, thanks. It's great to be here.
We want to ask you a few questions, and we'll start with, tell me about using humor in tense situations. You must speak to some audiences that are occasionally a little bit hostile to your ideas. How do you use humor in those kinds of situations?
You know, I feel like science can be quite a difficult and obtuse topic to talk about. And I think that anything that gets people to connect with emotions that are universal, regardless of the topic you're talking about, is great, which is why I use humor, which is why I use storytelling. I think that the best way of making people care about things that they might not care about is by getting them to connect on that very deep, visceral, emotional level, by feeling things with you, by laughing with you, by sympathizing with stories of successes or failures or triumphs or quests. And I think that is at the heart of this idea of telling stories about science, of, you know, whether it's creating exhibits or whether it's writing news pieces. I think, you know, we can trigger that sense of shared empathy through those means.
You must encounter some difficult situations with questions from people who don't quite understand what you're talking about, I'm guessing, or are actively hostile to it or opposed to it. Tell me about a situation in which you had either online or in person at an interview or a conference or something where you had to respond to someone who was asking a very difficult question.
Oh, man. I feel like this is a difficult question.
Well, so, like, for example, one of the ones that came up this morning that we talked about.
Okay, so, you know, I just gave a talk about diversity at this conference and why it's important and, you know, focusing a lot about gender diversity and creating more space and voice for women in sciences. We've got one fellow asked in the Q&A, you know, isn't it going to be a problem if we push this so far that we'll create a reverse inequality where boys will be disadvantaged instead of girls? And you know, I just feel like if you're on stage, you have to treat questions with respect. But you know, my view is, why spend so much time worrying about some kind of hypothetical inequality that we're such a long way from, rather than actually dealing with what is in front of you? And I think that those questions can be well-meaning, but they can also be massively derailing. You know, they can focus energy and attention away from the issues that actually matter and that people are having to deal with nowadays. And I think that the thing to do is to refocus people's minds on what is currently at stake, what people are dealing with right now in the moment, not some sort of far-off counterfactual.
Absolutely. You spoke a little bit about maybe the leg up that boys may have over girls early on in science. One of the things I think you talked a little bit about was how it's not the challenge isn't getting girls interested, it's keeping them interested. Mm-hmm. On a personal level, can you talk about how you got interested in science early on and whether there was ever a turning point for you where you feel like you stayed with science because of something?
I was always a nature geek, like right from the start. So when I was a kid, I went to zoos a lot, I watched natural history documentaries, and I think that very naturally led to doing science at school and then at university and then working as a PhD student. And I think it was only after spending about a year in a lab that I realized that I was catastrophically bad at doing that and much better and much safer writing about science and talking about it. But, you know, that inflection point was quite difficult because I think so many of us wrap our love of science around this identity as a scientist, where in fact, you know, being on a tenure-tracked research position is very much a minority career path in the sciences. And there are so many ways to exercise one's love of science, whether it's working in a science center or whether as a science journalist. You know, ultimately, it's about being curious about the world around us and wanting to understand how that world works. And there are all sorts of ways of exercising that love that don't have to do with, like, you know, pipetting liquids in a laboratory.
What is your favorite science center, or what's the one that you go to most often?
Oh, that's a great question. The one that has really stuck with me is the California Academy of Sciences. I had a wonderful trip there. I really love what they do. I love some of the special exhibits. Like they have this giant, like, globular rainforest encased in glass, the spiral staircase that you can walk up. Love that. And I'm just a huge fan of zoos in general. My fiance and I try to go to zoos whenever we can in whatever cities we visit. I recently went to Philly Zoo, which I think is the oldest in the country, and I think does a great job of, you know, caring for the animals, you know, thinking really carefully about the design. It's got these new walkways where animals can walk between exhibits and visitors can interact with them, and they can interact with the zoo in a very different way than a lot of other zoos. So I'm a huge fan.
Since you're such a big zoo fan, I have to ask, what's your favorite animal?
Oh, geez. Okay, so this is hard because there are so many, and I love a great number of them. You know, my answer varies from day to day. Some days I would say, like, octopuses. I love mantis shrimps. But after the Philly Zoo, I'm going to say gibbons. So gibbons are kind of like the ape that everyone forgets. Everyone's super into, like, gorillas and orangutans and chimps, but... and gibbons are even, like, known as lesser apes, right? But they are just extraordinarily beautiful. Gibbons do move by a thing called brachiation. They have a ball and socket joint in their wrist, rather than the hinge-like joints that we have, which allows them to pivot their entire body weight around their wrist, which makes it very easy for them to swing through trees. And if you watch footage of them doing this, or even go to a zoo and see them swinging about, like, the ropes and the equipment in their enclosures, they are just astonishingly graceful in a way that, like, I could just watch for hours. So just for right now, I'm going to say world's biggest gibbon fan.